This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. In 1988, the group West Harlem Environmental Action, or We Act for Environmental Justice, was launched in New York. The group was formed to raise awareness about pollution in the poor, mostly minority community. 24 years later, the group is still active. Its co-founder, Peggy Shepherd, now serves as executive director. She will speak at Western Michigan University tomorrow night as part of the Changing Climates series presented by the Center for the Humanities. Peggy Shepherd, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Glad to be with you today.
Can you begin by defining environmental justice?
Yes. Environmental justice is the fair and equitable treatment of all communities in regards to environmental enforcement, environmental protection, as well as green benefits. We know that some communities, generally communities of color and low income, are disproportionately impacted by pollution, primarily because those communities are less informed about the issues, have less political power as well.
Is this somehow different from other areas of public policy, or is being wealthy and well-connected generally an advantage when it comes to any sort of public policy?
Well, certainly we know that big money makes a difference. We know that Congress is very influenced by lobbyists who are able to make very significant contributions from corporations and the business community. So, yes, wealth, power, affluence is very important in influencing public policy, as well as important in being able to do the research, develop their own reports and data that is also influential.
Now, if someone were to go on YouTube and find your TED Talk, they would find you discussing the origins of the term environmental racism. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, I think we know that over the years, racism is systemic and it's been institutionalized. If you do a little research or reading, you will be able to understand how, for instance, segregation and housing discrimination have come about because of some of the federal housing policies. So what we do understand is that racism is institutionalized in the way we do business and the way we do outreach to different communities, to different businesses. For instance, you'll find that at a typical state regulatory agency that regulates or grants permits for industry, you will find that industry pretty much has an open door to those agencies. They're on first-name basis, they're well-known, they're in and out of those agencies. But for a community, to even know how to interact with a state agency, they may never have done that. That state agency may never have even reached out to a community where a permit is being granted.
And you were based in West Harlem, and still are, correct?
Yes, I am.
And that's a very important issue, I would assume, for the citizens in Harlem, that having access, being able to get in the door with a state regulator can't be very easy when you're someone who's from a community like Harlem. Is that right?
That is correct, but some of that's changed in New York. Some years ago, I guess about 10 years ago now, we developed an environmental justice advisory committee to our state Department of Environmental Conservation. And that committee was able to make a few changes. We recommended some fairly significant changes, but of course those changes were not adopted. So really what was adopted was earlier notification of a permit being applied for by industry, expanded outreach to a broader range of community organizations to let them know about permits in their communities. So again, those kinds of things are fairly easy for government agencies to do. Oh, we'll send out more notices, we'll send them earlier. But when you actually talk to them and make recommendations, and actually our recommendations came from very serious environmental law professors who really know these issues. And they helped us with these recommendations. And some of them, you know, are around changing environmental review standards, looking at if you're going to grant a permit, that you do a profile of that community. If that community is one with very glaring health disparities, perhaps a new permit should not be granted there. So there are numbers of issues and recommendations that we made to our New York State agency, and of course none of those were taken. And that happens all over the country. All over the country in different cities, some groups have been able to make a little more progress with their state agencies, and some have not been able to make any at all.
I was going to ask you about West Virginia, where there have been a couple of chemical spills and contamination of drinking water. West Virginia does not have a big minority population, but it's certainly not wealthy either. Does this perhaps show that at least part of the problem is class, perhaps somewhat different from race?
As I may have said in the beginning, and let me clarify if I did not, environmental justice is focused on communities of color and low income. So, for instance, I work within the National Environmental Justice Movement, and I work with a coalition around the country focused on climate change that includes several very significant organizations in Appalachia. And we are working with them because we feel a kinship with those issues and with the way they're being treated, with their lack of environmental protection. And so we absolutely do work with low-income communities as well. And those communities in Appalachia are totally oppressed by some of these companies, especially the coal mining companies. This particular spill has been devastating, absolutely devastating to the folks there. As we know, drinking water is just critical. Even the water that, you know, is coming out of your shower head that you're bathing in, if that is contaminated, you know, that can cause illness to people who are showering or bathing in contaminated water as well as drinking it.
President Clinton signed an executive order 20 years ago which required all federal agencies to make achieving environmental justice part of its mission. Has that improved the situation at all?
It certainly has brought some attention to the issue, but you'd be surprised. I was somewhere last month, and a city commissioner made the comment that, 20 years ago, environmental justice was just a catchword that didn't really mean anything. And I was floored that he thought that, because 20 years ago, President Clinton's executive order created a visibility to the issue. It meant that federal agencies had to develop plans on how they would address the disproportionate impact in communities of color and low income. Now, what has been the reality? The reality has been that those agencies have developed, you know, inconsequential plans that are not focused on achieving measurable results. And so we feel that the promise of that executive order has not been kept. Now, President Obama, just a couple of years ago, 2 years, I believe, reaffirmed the Clinton executive order. But unfortunately, we needed more than reaffirmation. We needed more teeth in that executive order. For instance, there's no annual reporting to the president or to Congress or to anyone about what you have done to reduce pollution in these communities. So there's really no real accountability to the executive order, unfortunately. And there could be. It could be amended and beefed up to be a serious document that can achieve some serious results. But that has not happened.
There are a couple of ongoing environmental issues in this part of Southwest Michigan. One of those is PCB contamination at an old landfill site, which is currently under review. And we'll see yet how much the EPA is going to clean up there. And then the cleanup of the Kalamazoo River from a massive oil spill in 2010. For people who are advocating on these issues, what sort of things might you say to them in terms of what's effective for environmental activism? What sort of things get the job done perhaps better than others?
Certainly, residents have to be organized. That is the first step, real strong organization. And in order to organize your neighbors, you also need to work to get them better informed on the issues. These issues are often complex. There's a lot of science there, but it can be readily understood if you develop the right kind of, training programs or training sessions or workshops. But you really do have to get people educated so that they can speak in an informed way about their issues. You know, government is very used to people coming and rightfully complaining, but always having a story or, just an oral presentation. What we know now works well is to have an evidence-based campaign that you can organize residents around. And when I say evidence-based, I mean having the data. If you don't have data that's already been peer-reviewed, published in journals, there's now a move towards citizen science. And so now there is good technology that will allow regular folks to have an air monitor that they can wear on their person and monitor the air they're taking in. There's technology that will allow people to monitor their water quality as well, and to be able to keep that data in a way that they can use to influence government agencies. It's always very helpful. Michigan has a number of quality universities and institutions. It's important to partner with some of those academics to help you do rigorous research that, again, can stand up to scrutiny.
Peggy Shepherd, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Peggy Shepherd is the co-founder and executive director of We Act for Environmental Justice. She will speak tomorrow night at 6 o'clock in Western Michigan University's Knaus Hall as part of the Changing Climates series presented by Western's Center for the Humanities. Links with more information and longer versions of interviews on West Southwest can be found at wmuk.org. This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.